Our next case is 2014-140, Navistar Incorporated versus Richard A. Levin, Tax Commissioner of Ohio. For the appellant, Ms. Gall.
Chief Justice O'Connor and members of the court, may it please the court. The appellant Navistar has been doing business in Ohio since 1902. It opened a plant in Springfield and has there employed generations of Ohioans in good-paying manufacturing jobs. Through good times and bad times, Navistar has never turned its back on the state of Ohio. Now, employment is up in the plant, and about 1,400 Ohioans work there. Counsel, my co-counsel, Mr. Engel, is going to share with me, per order of the court, part of my opening. He represents the Ohio Manufacturers Association and the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, who are each amicus in this court. And he will explain on their behalf the social and economic policy and the tax policy behind this case. Simply stated, the manufacturers of the state of Ohio, when the General Assembly decided to change the taxation system from a corporate franchise tax to what is called a commercial activities tax, were approached by the manufacturers in conjunction with the Ohio Department of Taxation, and they agreed to what was called informally the grand bargain. It was to use state tax operating losses, which many Ohio manufacturers had on their books. And only in the tax world would one say that a loss is an asset. But these NOLs, as they're called in shorthand, which are created first by federal tax law and the Internal Revenue Code, and then adopted by just about every state in this country, and long adopted in 573304 of the Ohio Revised Code, were actually assets on the manufacturer's books. The agreed neutral statute was that if you were an Ohio manufacturer and you had at least $50 million of net operating losses on your books, it got converted in a form and a formula to a credit to be used over the course of actually about 20 years.
Counsel, you've caught my attention with your term, the grand bargain. Who were the parties to the grand bargain?
It was a group of Ohio manufacturers, those that large, sophisticated, and small and medium manufacturers incur losses, especially automobile and truck manufacturers. Navistar makes what are called medium and heavy duty trucks at the plant. So it's generally a manufacturing business, not always, and it's generally a business that's cyclical. And all of us, I think, in this room understand that in the vehicle business. In the truck business especially, and this is the evidence of record, the truck business is cyclical because of environmental engine pollution requirements. So some
years— Was the bargain made with the tax commissioner?
I'm so sorry.
Was the bargain made with the tax commissioner?
Yes, directly. The testimony, uncontroverted, was of
and Navistar ended up with a $27 million loss carry forward. And that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
But then didn't Navistar revise its financial reports with the Securities and Exchange Commission?
Yes, for that year, the statute said you take the numbers that are on your books at the end of your fiscal year 2004. In 2000, which Navistar did, and there's no controversy about timeliness and calculation, right, except for this restatement. Mr. Engel, on behalf of the OMA and the Chamber, will explain this also. But the statute picked a fixed point in time, and that was the end of the fiscal year 04 for any qualifying Ohio manufacturer. And there were a number of reasons for that, mostly fiscal certainty to the state of Ohio. The gentleman who for more than 25 years has run the numbers for the Ohio Department of Taxation testified, and he said, we took all these numbers and we baked those numbers into the budget for this 20-year period.
And was that $27 million NOL pursuant to generally accepted accounting procedures?
That's the problem. Federal tax law and state tax law controls, not generally accepted accounting principles. The department was wrong, the Board of Tax Appeals was wrong, and the testimony was very clear. This is a federal, the calculation was not based on a general ledger account that would have been governed. The calculation was, and there's exhibits 37 and 38 that are in the record before the board and the court, showed that on the books of Navistar, per federal tax law, you accumulate NOLs. They're long-lived assets. And then per 573304 of the Ohio Revised Code, you modify it. The statute takes about four pages. So you take a federal NOL, you modify it, you have an Ohio NOL, and then every year for a specified statutory period of time, you can use that NOL to offset your both federal and state tax burden. That is not GAAP.
Was that what was agreed to in this bargain that you spoke of? Did the tax commissioner agree that the NOL would be established using the federal standard, not GAAP?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, the, I think, one of the issues. The other two mistakes the tax commissioner made were, he argued to the board and he's argued to this court, well, the statute in question, 5731.13, said that we could audit. And audit means we could do this denial of the claim. The problem with that is there was no audit. The gentleman who's the executive assistant tax commissioner, a wonderful public servant who's, I think, more than 30 years at the department, testified, and on cross-examination he said more than once, we didn't audit, there was no audit, we didn't audit.
But didn't Navistar restate its financials?
It restated its financials.
And when the...
Later.
When the tax commissioner looked at that, it saw that there was a change in the valuation allowance and applied that and wiped out the loss carry forward. Is that the problem?
Well, that's the tax commissioner's problem. And the Board of
Navistar's
Tax Appeals
problem.
Fell for it hook, line, and sinker. That happened after the statutory fixed point in time. The commissioner and the manufacturers agreed that there would be a date upon which this calculation would be made, and that would create the credit. There is no place in the statute that says you can go past that date. And if this court thinks there is and rules there is, we get to change our number two. These valuation allowances, which is a subjective, every quarter, if you're a public company and you have to file your financials, your financial statements, every quarter the company itself makes a subjective judgment. I'm going to use all of my NOLs, I'm going to use half of my NOLs.
What did Navistar do when it changed the valuation allowance? How did it affect its valuation?
At a point in time past the statute.
Past the $27 million.
In December of 07, when the restated financials came out, the valuation allowance went to what's called 100%. Navistar's subjective guess, and these are only guesses, and they change quarterly, was we're not going to be able to use these NOLs. But if we're going to change the fixed point in time, our fixed point in time which we qualify for, is September 7, 2011. That was during the trial, and the testimony was the valuation allowance was taken off.
Is it your view that the loss carry forward of $27 million, when does the 20-year period start?
It started in
04?
2010.
2010?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you used 10% in 2010, 20% in 2011, and we have filed, Navistar has filed, because we thought we were going to win, so we filed protective claims every year. There is a mechanism by which Navistar can obtain. But here's the thing we think. We think that the statute was clear on its face. Lots of tax statutes, lots of statutes in general, have a fixed point in time. If the commissioner can go forward to deny the credit, then we want to go forward some more. The rule of law, what's good for the goose is good for the
gander. Counsel, does that mean you're asking for a remand?
A remand to the commission, well, it would have to go back to the BTA and to the commissioner with instructions to reverse the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals and to remand, because there, you know, the statute has steps, to remand it back to the commissioner, pick up the number that's in the record that there is uncontroverted testimony, and do the recalculation and increase the credit. Increase the credit.
And counsel, I'm over here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Admittedly, I'm about as far from an accountant as a justice might be. So for me, I'm trying to just kind of boil this down to a more simple approach. What I hear you saying is this is a snapshot. This is a snapshot in time. But what I also hear you saying is that it's not necessarily a bright line. This isn't, would you agree that you have to have some mechanism in place to make a correction? I mean, you know, a correction could help you or it could hurt you, but there's got to be some mechanism to say, but there was a mistake that happened.
There was no mistake. First of all, there was no mistake.
I understand that would be your argument, but in terms of looking of us writing something that's going to have an impact later, do we have to say this is a bright line, it's a snapshot in time, we don't really care what happens down the road?
Yes, that is the rule.
Why is that?
Because, as Mr. Engel would explain, this was to take an asset on Ohio Manufacturers' books, convert it to a credit against the commercial activities.
I get that, but what if there's a clerical, let's give the simplest example, what if there's a clerical error? There's simply something mathematically wrong with that calculation. Is there no ability at all?
Well, there is.
That's what I'm getting to.
There was an audit, and that was a four-year period of time, and the evidence at the Board of Tax Appeals in Joint Exhibit J was we took all of the applications that were filed. The commissioner audited some, found some math errors, and actually the biggest math error was taxpayers who came in and didn't have $50 million. And so the decisions, the audit decision and the final determination, which none of which were appealed, were you don't have $50 million. You either have $2 million or $7 million or $13 million. You don't have $50 million. But on the state side, on the revenue side, the state wanted a fixed point in time so they could see this calculation out 20 years, and there's extensive testimony on behalf of the tax commissioner.
Is it your view that the December 31st, 2004 date is the time that everyone had agreed to and that the commissioner has used the 2007?
Yes.
Evaluate?
Yes. And
you think that's the problem?
It is the problem, if the commissioner can go past.
Yes, then you can go back as well.
We can go past, too.
I understand.
Counsel, before you sit down, I want to go back to what you opened with, what a fine corporate citizen Navistar is in employing 1,400 people in Springfield. They used to employ a whole lot more than that in Springfield. And the large trucks that they make that our counties and townships and the state buys, many of them are made in Mexico now, not in Springfield.
They are made in different locations. The point, well, there are two points. Having been in the plant on the manufacturing floor and watched,
I mean, we're happy for the 1,400 jobs, but I'm not sure that anybody would in Springfield would regard Navistar as their history over time as being great for Springfield.
I think the people on that plant floor that are stamping out doors for those trucks are very grateful for those jobs. And there are hiring, and hopefully, and actually what happened was the reason on September 7, 2011, the reason that valuation allowance got released and all those losses were used was because business had gotten much better. And it's solid. And
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Council, your time has been used, but you may take a minute.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, my name is Mark Engel, and I'm here on behalf of the two amici curiae. Ms. Gall has outlined the situation, but from the standpoint of my clients, let me explain why we think that this decision is wrong. First of all, there was no pre-announcement that subsequent events beyond the deadline could be considered to change the credit amount. The statute doesn't call for it, no rule was promulgated, no announcement was made, but the tax commissioner on his own volition decided, hey, this reduces the credit, we like that result, we're gonna do this.
But how do we verify the number at the end of 2004? I mean, it has to be verified somehow, right? 27 million of losses in this particular case. The audit or what the correction needs to take place, does it not?
And that was in the statute. If there was indeed a math error, to get to the other justice's question, that could be fixed. But the record shows here, Mr. Pinney went back and looked at the books and records and said, you know what, the information that was in the books and records at the end of 2004 did not change before 2007. What changed was the judgment of management, whether or not it could recover the benefit, the financial benefit of the net operating losses in the future. That's the only thing that changed.
So you're saying it did not change the 27 million? The number itself did not change, you're saying?
Not as a result of the restatement, Your Honor, no. And the other point, I know my time is short, but we have to make this. The point I think that's most obnoxious is the one-way nature of what was done here. Clearly, had the taxpayer had a reduction in the reduction in the valuation allowance, which would have increased its credit, after the deadline, the Department of Taxation clearly would not have allowed that change. I don't think there's anybody that would say that they would welcome taxpayers to increase that credit. And it's that one-way nature of what was done here that really disturbs the business community. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. Mr. Hubbard.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Actually, I would agree wholeheartedly with opposing counsel that there is a snapshot date, certain date. And it's the fiscal year end in 2004, which actually for this taxpayer was October 31st of 2004. And what happened in this case was Navistar was required after a Security and Exchange Commission investigation for fraud to restate its financial statements for that date certain for the fiscal year in 2004. So the value of the net operating loss is in this case was based on a restatement of that snapshot value. It wasn't the snapshot of the 2007 value, it was a snapshot of the 2004 fiscal year end value.
So that's was it a correction of the 27 million operating net operating loss Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'm saying that was zero for the 2004 snapshot period because the taxpayer had not applied generally accepted accounting principles in getting to the $27 million figure. Instead, they violated generally accepted accounting principles by ignoring on their financial statements, they had drastically understated their financial losses. Their actual company was doing far worse than it had disclosed to the shareholders. And that's why the SEC said, you have to file restated financials for that same period showing your losses. And because they had such greater losses, their financial picture was so bad that they projected that they couldn't use the net operating losses for future years to offset future income because there would be no income over the carrying period of the NOLs. The NOLs are a carry forward. They can be carried forward. They have a shelf life of 5, 15, or 20 years. And so if they're not used to offset positive income over their carrying period, then they expire worthless. And that's why the General Assembly expressly provided it's not just the raw gross figure of the NOL.
But counsel, it seems to me, I'm hearing your argument, but it seems to me on the other side you're hearing an argument that there was a grand bargain and the date was 2004 and that the tax commissioner now wants to use a different date, and therefore I think what I'm hearing is the grand bargain has been violated, and so therefore let's all go back to the table.
No,
is
actually,
is that what I'm hearing this morning?
No, actually, Your Honor, and I apologize for not being clear. The fact is that the grand bargain was to use the 2004 fiscal year end as the determination, the snapshot date. It's just that Navistar, when it originally filed its financial statement for 2004, didn't apply generally accepted accounting principles correctly, and so it overstated the value of its net operating loss carryforwards.
But Mr. Hubbard, Ms. Gal says that it was not GAAP that was agreed to, but that the federal and state tax laws would apply and not GAAP.
Well, actually, it's not an either or. The starting point is to look at the company's gross amount of net operating loss carryforwards. And then the next step, and it's expressly stated in the statute in Division A6, that you apply, as Justice O'Donnell pointed out, you applied a valuation allowance that's a reduction to that gross value to recognize that maybe those net operating loss carryforwards that are in existence aren't going to be usable over their carrying period. They have a
shelf
life.
So is it the number or the fact that they are not usable? It sounds like you're talking two different things.
The number that is pertinent for determining the value of the credit is the usable amount. It's the net realizable value of the credit. That's what the valuation allowance does. The statute requires the deal, the grand bargain, was to use the value after reducing the gross amount of the net offers and carry forwards to their realizable value, to the value that they actually would use over. See, what happened is the corporate franchise tax is being repealed, right? So if there weren't a credit for those net operating losses that had accumulated through 2004, then they would expire by reason that they couldn't be applied against net income for future years because there's no corporate franchise tax.
Are you saying that that we're not really looking at 2004, but you're looking at what happens later to see if 2004 numbers can be used later?
No, what I'm saying is that for 2004, the company has to issue financial statements. But those financial statements under the statute, the credit statute here requires that the amount of the net operating losses is reduced by the valuation allowance. The valuation allowance is in compliance with GAAP. There's a direct relationship in Division A10 of the statute. In their briefing, they don't even cite A10. They ignore its existence. And that statute controls because it says that the determination of the value of the NOLs must be in accordance with generally accepted accounting.
So what would the number have been?
Zero, because they couldn't.
From 27 million, the number turns to zero?
And the reason for that is their financial, I know, they were surprised. See, what happened is they were required by statute to make their credit claim for the NOL carryforwards by June 30th of 2006. And in the spring of 2006, they submitted their claim, and in a letter to the commissioner, they said, We are engaged in a restatement of our 2004 financials, and we anticipate that as a result of the restatement, we will get a bigger valuation of the NOL carryforwards.
But the Navistar experts disagreed with your characterization, did they not?
No, they actually didn't. Actually, all the accounting experts agreed that what Navistar itself did when it filed its restated financials, it used only the information that was available to them as of the end of the 2004 tax year. It's just that when Navistar filed its original 2004 financial statement, what they used was they used that data, that information that was available, but they didn't apply generally accepted accounting principles. In fact, they made fundamental errors in applying GAAP. And so the SEC required them, and they voluntarily did file, corrected financial statements for that snapshot period that said the value of the NOLs for nationally, not just in Ohio, nationally, they were all zero. Because their position, they increased their losses by over $500 million for the 2004 and the immediately preceding periods. They were tanking, and their stock went very low, and it was anticipated that they were going to go out of business, essentially.
So
now they've since rebounded, but that was 7 years later.
If I understood Mr. Engel's argument on behalf of the amicus, the biggest complaint is that this seems to be a one-way street.
Actually,
ex-commissioner gets to go back and sort of relook. And if that occurs, shouldn't the taxpayer also have the opportunity to go back?
That's an excellent question. And the answer to that is, if the restatement went the other way, in other words, if the NOL carryforwards increased, which is what Navistar actually anticipated when it filed the letter with its application of the CAT credit. They said, Commissioner, we think the restated financials were going to give us a bigger value, and we will accordingly have a greater credit. And contrary to what Mr. Engel said, we wholeheartedly agree with that. In fact, with other taxpayers, that's what we did when they had restatements.
We gave them
a bigger amount, is provided that the restatement is for that 2004 snapshot period. Now, their one is to use not a restatement, but what they said prospectively for 2011, not for the valuation allowance that relates back to 2004.
Snapshot period equates with the conversion over to the CAT tax, right?
It does, and that's why the 2004 is a snapshot date, because that's right. When the commercial activity tax was phased in, the commercial franchise tax was phased out.
Is that universal across Ohio, that date, fiscal year ending in 04?
And the reason for that is obvious, because that's the last year that the commercial corporate franchise tax was fully in effect. So accumulating the NOLs as of that date and determining what their usable value would have been had the corporate franchise tax continued. In fact, in Ohio, if we look at their corporate franchise tax returns that were filed for 2005 through the end of the tax 2010, they didn't have any positive income. They couldn't have used any of the net operating loss carryforwards.
So what you're saying is that the Securities and Exchange investigation resulted in a valuation allowance different, and it affected the amount of the fiscal records that existed at the end of 04.
Exactly, on the very value, on this very net operating loss asset.
So it was a GAAP mistake of $27 million?
Yes. In fact, it was it's not really a mistake, Your Honor. What it is.
That's really hard to understand. In 2004, they say we have a net operating loss of $27 million. And then you're saying the restatement occurs and it wipes it out. So it should have been zero net operating loss?
We don't have to say it's hard. It might be hard to believe in the abstract, but it's not hard to believe when you realize that it was Navistar itself that was representing that was what the value was. I mean, that's what their financial statements say. They reduce the value of their net operating loss carryforwards to zero, not only just in Ohio, nationally, everywhere. And the reason for that is they suffered amazing losses that they hadn't formally disclosed. And so their financial position was very bad.
Mr. Hubbard, I'm trying to remember all the arguments for the conversion from the corporate franchise to the CAT tax. I think it was that The corporate franchise tax resulted in very unequal and seemingly unfair outcomes across the corporate community. And so the legislature decided to get rid of it and instead impose the commercial activities tax at a very low rate, but it meant that everybody's going to be paying something, is basically what happened, right?
That's absolutely right.
And so what has that meant for Navistar?
Well, basically, Navistar is fully enjoying that. The amount that they pay under the corporate CAT tax is very competitive compared to other states that impose net income taxes now that they're making income. But when they're making losses, they were paying corporate franchise tax under the net worth method. Okay, and under the net worth of the corporate franchise tax, what you do to determine liability is you look at the net worth on the financial statements as of that snapshot date each year.
And that net worth would have included the $27 million as an asset, right?
Well, no, it wouldn't, because it has to be in compliance with GAAP. See, okay. This court has said that in a series of cases, a long line of cases, that no, for the net worth method, you look to GAAP. It has to be in accordance with GAAP.
So the Board
of Tax Appeals,
it would not have been included and driven up their corporate franchise tax.
Absolutely. In other words, the General Assembly just followed the same approach that this court had blessed with respect to the net worth basis of the corporate franchise tax.
Counsel, I do have a question on the GAAP issue.
Absolutely.
Was there testimony that from an independent standpoint, said, I've looked at what they did, and it was not GAAP compliant?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And whose testimony? What testimony would you point us
testimony.
To?
The fact is that because they're a publicly held company, they have to have certified public accountants bless the financial statements. And what happened here, the originally filed financial statement for 2004, the CPA firm was Deloitte. And what Navistar did, they uncovered all this massive fraud.
Well, to shorten it, my read of this is there was nobody who said independently of Navistar, I've looked at this and it's not GAAP compliant. Instead, you looked at what Navistar said and said, well, they said it wasn't GAAP compliant, so that's good enough for us.
Well,
and
no.
Why is that allowed under the statute?
Actually, Your Honor, first of all, what I wanted to say is, no, the financial statements that set forth the zero valuation for the snapshot period of the end of fiscal year 2004 on the financial statements for the value of these NOLs, that was signed off on not only by Navistar's management, by its outside accounting firm. They certified that was in accordance with
that. Maybe I'm not being clear. I want to know what the tax commissioner did. I guess I want to know, was there independent of what Navistar said?
And it's outside accountant.
And it's outside accountant. Did somebody on behalf of the tax commissioner look at it independently and say, we have concluded on our own that this was not GAAP compliant, and so we're taking action based on that? I'm just not seeing it in the record that somebody other than Navistar and its expert.
Well, basically, the way the statute says, it takes it out of the commissioner's hands. The commissioner's required to follow and use if in fact on their books and records, on the financial statements for 2004, the valuation is whatever it is under GAAP, that's what the commissioner has to apply. That's what the statute says. The department doesn't have any independent role. If in fact that amount is in accordance with GAAP, and that's what their own people admitted, the commissioner then would apply that value. In other words.
But the hang up for me is I think Navistar is going to disagree with your characterization of what they said.
It's right in the, we cite chapter and verse in the financial statements. They say the value of the deferred tax assets, including the net operating loss carryforwards, it's right smack all over the financial statements.
Did they say that
what the Board of Tax Appeals held.
Did they say that with finality, or did they say these are the
finality.
Items that we think need to be reviewed? I think there were 10
or 11 absolutely
items.
They said the originally filed 2004 financial statement filed with the SEC by Navistar was not in compliance with GAAP, and that a proper valuation of the net operating loss carryforwards and all the other deferred tax assets.
What exhibits are?
What about Douglas Pinney, though, who said that in his view it was GAAP compliant?
No.
So
no.
We have testimony
to
that effect.
No. What he said is if we were to disregard the other financial statement changes that were made on the restated financials to 2004 regarding the income, if we disregard the fact that the income was losses were increased by $530 million over 3 years, if we disregard that information, then it would be reasonable. So his testimony, it was a very theoretical, cabin-conditioned testimony, as opposed to the testimony of Dr. Ray Stevens, who actually was instrumental in drafting this legislation and working with the department, and that's in the record. Dr. Ray Stevens was an SEC fellow, an expert, and the accounting chair at Ohio State and Ohio University. This court has recognized his accounting expertise in several cases in this court, and the Board of Tax Appeals recognized him as an expert.
We have two different experts that were testifying, and we don't have the BTA actually saying this was GAAP compliant, do we?
We actually do, because
we have that finding in the BTA record.
Absolutely, because they looked at the financial records that restated the 2004 snapshot, and it was zero.
Does it say that in the opinion?
Yes, it does. In fact, what the board said is the plain meaning of the statutes are that you look to GAAP to determine the value of the net operating losses, because that's what's required under Division A-10 of the statute.
Did Deloitte prepare the financials with the $27 million?
Yes, they did. KPMG did. And what Navistar took the extraordinary step of suing Deloitte, saying that they were the ones responsible for the fraud, for not stating the financial records correctly and hiding all these massive losses. They filed a complaint in Cook County, Illinois, that was removed to federal court and was settled out of court. But that's all you have to look at to see that they were admitting that their originally filed financial statements were not in accordance with GAAP. They sued their accounting firm.
Counsel, thank you.
Thank you.
You've used your time. Whoever's going to do rebuttal can have a minute.
The GAAP, or the complaint, was proffered into the record. There was no testimony on it. And counsel's characterization is absolutely false.
Did the BTA make a finding that this was GAAP compliant or not?
No.
Okay.
Actually, and to Justice French's point, that's where we started the case. We thought, we knew the answer. The first witness was Executive Assistant Tax Commissioner Ron Potter. And the first question we said was, did you do an audit of anything, of the form, of the books and records, of GAAP, of anything? And Ron said, Ron's an honorable, decent guy. Supplement pages 423 through 425, Ron said, we never did an audit. Navistar was very transparent about the restatement.
Mr. Hubbard says it wasn't necessary to do an audit. Mr. Hubbard, if I understood correctly, said, and he's nodding back there, so I think I understood it correctly, that they didn't have to do an audit.
Well, it depends on what day the commissioner is asserting an argument. I mean, today he says they didn't have to do an audit. The reason that I articulated in the commissioner's brief before this court is the reason we could change the number and go past the end of the fiscal year is because we had this audit authority. So it just sort of depends on what position.
What are the two dates that you're saying that the tax commissioner went past?
Reaching forward to December 2007, when the restated financial statement came out for fiscal year 2004.
Okay.
And so they went about 3 years into the future and took that number.
Okay. But they took that number, if I understood Mr. Hubbard's argument correctly, because Navistar admitted that the financials were originally prepared were incorrect. And so the corrected financials restated the date, although published in 07, republished the number as of the end of the fiscal year for 04. I thought that was his argument.
Well,
so they didn't really go past the date.
The statute, though, says fixed point in time for
the
reasons
fixed point remained fiscals as of 04 year end.
Yes, all of those. You see, one really would, you can really get into the weeds on this gap stuff. The base number was never required to be gap. That the Internal Revenue Code and the tax code of the state of Ohio establish the base number.
But the number has to be correct. And according to Mr. Hubbard, the $27 million was not a correct number.
And he is absolutely wrong about that.
What was,
absolutely
what
wrong.
What was correct about it? What was correct about the number?
The accumulation, Carol Garnett, who was the VP tax of Navistar at the time, testified, as did our two experts. They went to Chicago, well, she works in Chicago. They went to Chicago and they looked at the accumulated federal net operating losses. That's exhibit 37, A, B, C, D, and E. Those numbers never changed. Those numbers were correct. The only number that changed in December of 2007 was how much subjectively management guessed was going to be used. Their first in...
So, well, I guess I understand. What you're saying is correct is, yes, they lost the $27 million, right? What's incorrect is their decision, or they changed their minds, as to where to show that on the ledger, as an asset?
It was the guess, the VA, the valuation allowance, it's an odd term and it really doesn't describe what goes on, is a management guess of how much of those tax losses were going to be used every single quarter of the year. Every single quarter it changed, and that's why the manufacturers and the General Assembly picked one point.
Well, management guesses are not, I mean, to stand here and argue in a tax case that we have to rely on management guesses to determine the tax a corporation owes is not a comforting thought.
Well, but it's required. There's something called FASB 109. You know, the accountants issue more rules and regulations than lawyers do. There's FASB 109, and it says if you're a public company and you file your financials quarterly with the SEC, you are required to take your accrued federal NOL account, which is on the books and records of the company, and predict, they don't say guess, they say predict, based on objective and subjective evidence, what you think you're going to lose. If it's hard to think about. I had to think about it.
And then there's a footnote associated with that number, I assume.
It's right on the financial statements.
Right.
But the CPAs, the corporate CPAs, still use generally accepted accounting principles in filing all these things.
Correct.
So that is an issue here. It's an issue to see what the BTA is saying on the record about this, and we don't have that on the record, if I understand you correctly.
You have 3 days of lengthy testimony. May I just reference one other exhibit? Because I think there's some concern in the court's mind about the integrity of the NOL numbers. Exhibit 39, Navistar's Exhibit 39, is a chart which shows that 100% of those NOLs were accepted by the federal government in years basically 2005 through 2008. We also, on that chart, Exhibit 39, and there's testimony, we took the states in which there were plants, because where you have a plant, you have a lot bigger of a tax burden than if you just have maybe a sales office. Not 100%. Some states took 100% of those NOLs. Those were solid numbers. They were solid numbers when they went on the books. They were solid numbers at the end of fiscal year 2004, and they were solid numbers in the restatement. The only thing that ever changed was this valuation. But that gets you back into the box of how are we going to go past the fixed point in time. I very much appreciate the court allowing us additional time. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, we call a recess, please.